Welcome to Food Risk Podcasts, where we talk to people involved in the research project, to food authorities and to other stakeholders interested in clearly communicating food risk and benefits to consumers in Europe. In this programme, we talked to Adrian Moss, Director of Focus Business Communications, a digital marketing communications agency based in Southampton. How did you get involved in the Food Risk project?
We were asked to join and bring our practical experience of using social media alongside traditional media as a form of communication. The project itself was visionary in a way. I mean, it was the consortium was putting its ideas together in 2009, and the idea there was to look at how social media was starting to develop and become an opportunity to be part of the communication mix during a food crisis, a food risk, and also for benefits.
So what was your specific role in this project?
Our role was really to look at the dynamics of social media, how members of the public were using it to find information about a food risk developing, and how they were using social media again to communicate on that message to their social networks, and to get an understanding of the dynamics of how the tools were being used, and also what was being said, who was being most influential, and what sources of information they were using and passing on to other people. But before we could even do that, we had to look at the whole area of social media and the developing market for tools, analytical tools, tools that were available to help organisations track the online conversation. And one of the things we found very quickly was that there was a lot of tools out there and it was a fast developing market. And as part of the project, we, at the very start of it, really, we had to look at what became over 100 different tools that were available and evaluate a smaller number than those, actually narrow them down to a smaller number and eventually select the one that we felt that would be the best tool for us to use. And it was a tool that we needed to consider from cost point of view, but also coverage. You know, what are the best tools to cover a whole range of social media platforms, from Twitter all the way through to Facebook and blogs, YouTube, and across multiple languages, and then try and pull that data together and use it and understand the dynamics of how people were using it to make sense for official bodies and people that need to communicate to the public during times of crisis, food contamination and issues and safety.
Looking at all the data you collected, what have you found? Are there any trends?
Part of the project was to look back at a previous occurring food crisis, the 2008 dioxin contamination incident in Ireland. And it's fair to say that the use of social media then was very embryonic compared to the crisis that we ended up tracking in real time, which was the dioxin contamination of animal feed stuff in 2011. There was an order of magnitude increase. And we also tracked the EHEC contamination incident that occurred in mid-2011, although that hasn't formed part of the formal report that has been produced. And dramatically, it's increased how people are using it to source information. We were looking across multiple languages and multiple countries. So one of the first things that is obvious is there is large groups of people in each of the countries we chose. Not every European country is using social media as much as the next one. Generally, it's fair to say that large groups of the population are using it. So it's important finding to say that this is a viable platform for official authorities to be considering using alongside traditional media to communicate with the public. Secondly, generally the content and what people are looking for is information. There's a phase occurring during a crisis where people are just a bit shocked about it and they're simply passing on the information. But quickly, within a short period of time, measured in days, people are looking for extra information and advice. So one of the findings there was that there's definitely opportunities for official organisations to become more proactive in how they are using media to engage in the conversations with the public. Because in the absence of that use, the public have to rely on the information they can get, which is usually traditional media, or, which is worse, incorrect information or rumours that are cascading through the networks.
People often say social media is here today, gone tomorrow. Is that true? And how long do things remain online?
Well, that's a very interesting question, and it could be considered to be two, actually. First question being, should social media itself cease to exist? Will it be gone tomorrow? And then the comments, positive and negative, that are made on social media, how long do they last? If we take the first question, is social media here to stay? Absolutely. We've seen it go from strength to strength. And the whole concept of sharing information, communicating within communities has been around for a long time. And from 2004 onwards, the whole concept of Web 2 and social media has grown and will continue to grow. We've seen people just really love the idea of being able to self-create information, be it in blogs, be it on social network sites like Facebook and Twitter, and share information from an image point of view and also on video with things like YouTube. So that human interconnection will continue, whether they're the same platforms in a few years' time, whether there'll be changes, who knows. But the concept of social networking and social communities is here to stay. Secondly, the whole area of whether or not comments remain for a long time on the internet and within social media. The answer to that from the research we've done is yes. Google themselves have said that they are monitoring what's happening within social media and using that as a form of signal, as they call it, to help determine what information is provided back when a Google search is done. They're looking at the elements of the conversation, and when people search around a subject, the more that it's been talked about in social media, the higher the ranking will be. And part of the research within the Food Risk Project was to look at how long that those comments were still on when you did a Google search. How high were they in the ranking? And we looked at the first page and the second page, so the first 20 search terms. And we actually found that there was still an echo chamber effect. In other words, if there was quite considerable volumes of conversation around a subject, it was high in searches that were done months after the event. The practical consequences of that and what people should do is, in fact, it's showing that unless you're participating in the conversation at the time and getting your information out there and the links back to your own website at the time the conversations are occurring, you run the risk that the echo chamber effect, the residual information that's out there in the internet and likely to be discovered by people when they do searches, are going to be not your point of view. So let's assume that people have misinformation or are putting a particular negative perception on what's happening. That content will be discovered easier by people. So it's important that you participate at the time. And secondly, as further information becomes available or post-event further analysis and work is done, there's no reason to not continue to use social media to ensure that that information and the data you want to be in the public domain is searchable and available.
When doing all this, what did you find to be the biggest challenge?
I think that the biggest challenge for anybody that's looking at social media is simply the vast volume of information that comes through in a very short period of time. I mean, we're talking about many, many thousands of posts occurring within the first day and the first hour. And as increased numbers of people start to use social media, and it's very easy for them to, say, retweet information or post information on their Facebook page or blog about a breaking crisis or news, so that volume of data will increase. And one of the aspects that we very quickly realised working with real-time data was that we needed to look at tools and techniques to be able to capture that data stream and be able to make sense of what people are saying. So in research terms, it's like having tens of thousands of transcripts. And this is real data that people need to look at, because if people are starting to influence behaviour or it's been sent through to information that says, oh, it's dangerous, don't buy it anymore, then the reaction of that can significantly impact not only brands, but a whole industry. So in terms of being able to analyze the data, we needed to come up with a technique that we could say, well, let's run the data set and in almost near time start to analyze the content of those conversations and see where information people were being directed to, where were the links, the active links, who was posting or was being retweeted and highlighted as being a key influencer, and whether that information that could then be used in a short time scale, because there's no point months after the event starting to react to it. It needs to be done quickly. And certainly looking at the research that's been done around crisis management in the States, the official bodies that integrate social media within their traditional communication and advice to consumers seem to be having effectively being able to influence people's behaviour. Now, if we look at that and transpose crisis, a natural disaster type crisis situation, into something more of a food or a brand management crisis where people have concerns about the safety, then there is lessons to be learned on how that fast, large amount of data can be pulled down to something that can make sense, that then people can act on and advise the members of the public effectively.
From what you've found so far, what sort of impact will that have on how people manage communications in the future?
Having now looked at two real-time crises, the dioxin crisis contamination in 2011 and then the EHEC, having looked at what participation, or I should say very limited or non-existent participation from official organisations like the local food safety authorities and national agencies, I would certainly say looking forward, the participation in social media alongside what's done with traditional media, but to take more of a proactive stance and use social media tools to help drive traffic to official sources of information where people can then subscribe to receive updates to the latest status, as happens with crisis management in natural disasters. I think that's a very important lesson to learn. And secondly, is to be considering monitoring social media. In other words, just putting information out and hoping it sticks and hoping people understand it and hoping people do the best course of action for them isn't necessarily the best way of doing it. Social media is more of a conversation. There are different ways of approaching it. And just shouting out into the dark and hoping people listen and understand is not the best way. So using proactively listening tools to understand what people are doing, how they're behaving, where they're going for that information, how they're consuming that information and then acting upon it, gives a sort of 360 degree view of how to manage that process. And I think those lessons and the way people are using it actually have important potential in terms of addressing issues that may be beyond a pure food crisis, where we're looking at maybe nanotechnology or functional foods or some of the challenges that the food industry is facing, in order to help advise and inform publics better and get them involved in the debate and the discussions that are going on.
For more information on food risk, visit the website at www.foodrisk.org. That's foodrisk, FOODRISC.org.